Hey everyone, welcome back to Alert and Oriented. We are so excited for today's episode. Today we're heading into the world of MSK with a patient case. We'll walk through it step by step from that first chief complaint all the way down to the final diagnosis, and we'll give you, the listener, plenty of chances to pause, think it through, and test through your clinical reasoning. Whether you're a first-year med student or just love solving a good mystery, this one's going to be a lot of fun, so let's get started. Okay, hi everyone, I'm Caroline. I'm a M2 at Rush Medical College, and I'm one of the co-hosts for today.
Hi, I'm Sam. I'm a fourth year at Rush, and I'm also a co-host.
Yep. And then we have two guests today. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves?
Yeah. Hey guys, my name's Chris. I'm a second-year med student at Rush, originally from Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
Hey guys, I'm Grant. I'm also a second year here at Rush, and I'm from the suburbs of Chicago.
Welcome to Alert and Oriented, and thank you so much for being our guest today. So the way our episode layout is going to work is first we're going to have our first part with a case diagnosis. We're going to have 5 aliquots of information, and then Chris and Grant will let us know what they think the final diagnosis is. Then we'll have a quick teach back from Sam and I talking about the final diagnosis. And then finally, we'll have our Q&A reflections and some tips and tricks and clinical diagnosis strategies. So let's get started with our case-based diagnosis. The first aliquot of information that you're given is a general patient description. A 26-year-old woman presents to the clinic with progressive fatigue, joint pain, and morning stiffness for the past 6 months. She describes swelling and aching wrists, MCPs, and knees, and the stiffness lasts for about an hour before improving. On further questioning, she clarifies that the morning stiffness begins immediately after waking and gradually improves over the first hour of the day. She also reports intermittent low-grade fever. She also noted unintentional weight loss of approximately 10 to 12 pounds over the past 4 months, and she first noticed this because her clothes began to fit a little bit more loosely. She is denying any intentional dieting or changes in appetite, and her only medication is occasional ibuprofen for partial relief. Her family history is notable for her mother having rheumatoid arthritis. So hearing that, what are some things that are popping into your head right now thinking about?
Yeah, I think the first thing that kind of sticks out to me is the stiffness that lasts for an hour before improving. The unintentional weight loss kind of stands out to me. Family history, her mom having RA, that kind of stands out to me. Could be something related here.
Young woman kind of fits maybe something potentially autoimmune, just given the classic patient presentation. It's involving lots of joints. It's bilateral. I think the weight loss is something to note as well.
How are you guys like organizing your differential so far? Are there like two categories or two like bigger things you're thinking about? Or multiple, like how are you guys organizing your thoughts?
I think for me personally, I think I'm going acute or chronic. And I think this, it seems like a little chronic and also systemic a little bit. I think that's where I'm kind of organizing all these symptoms right now.
I think you could kind of bucket into autoimmune or something more of a localized process. And again, just given how diffuse her symptoms are throughout all the joints, I certainly at this point, with nothing else, lean more autoimmune, just because that'd be a lot going on to have something locally affect all those joints. But I think you need to find more before you can really nail down where you want to go.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Chronic, age, really widespread.
Yeah. Some exam findings that may be helpful. So her vitals, her temperature is 99.4, Fahrenheit, heart rate's 92, blood pressure is 108 over 62, resting rate is 14, and then 99% oxygen saturation on room air. For general, she appears tired but not in acute distress. And then her MSK exam findings are she has tenderness and mild swelling in bilateral wrists and MCP joints 2 to 4. Her knees have some small effusions, but no warmth or erythema. And her range of motion is mildly limited by discomfort, but there's no joint deformities, no synovial nodules, and no rashes at presentation as well. What do you guys think about the distribution and the symmetry of the joint involvement? Is that raising any flags in your mind about potential diagnoses?
Yeah, I mean, I think because it's symmetric, that kind of says a couple of things, kind of points to maybe RA along with like the family history, potentially the MCP joints being affected specifically in the wrist.
Yeah, this constellation of symptoms, as Chris was saying, certainly sticks out to RA along with the family history. There's nothing really in the vitals or general appearance or MSK findings that would make me feel like it's anything else. As of now, she's stable. Nothing's really jumping out that would make me kind of switch off what we were thinking so far.
Yeah. So it sounds like, if anything, these findings are supporting what you have in mind right now. So what next steps or tests would you order to better narrow down your differential?
I mean, we could do osteosynthesis just to rule out possible ascending arthritis. That might be a little too much, but, you know, maybe...
You're going to snicker?
Maybe, I mean, some obvious, like, CBC tests. And then maybe, because if we're thinking RA, maybe we could do, like, anti-CCP.
Yeah, I definitely think CBC, CP, get the whole workup. You can do an antibody test if you want to look at the rheumatoid or the anti-CCP. I also think you could get an ultrasound of the wrist or even an x-ray if you really wanted to be sure.
Yeah, I think those are great ideas. So you guys correctly guessed some of the labs that we order in this case. And so our next aliquot is a CBC. You order initial labs to assess for inflammation, anemia, and autoimmunity. For the listener, we have the lab results on the screen for our guests, and they have reference ranges included for clarity. Some things that stick out here, what are you guys seeing just from looking at the results?
Yeah, I think in the CBC, she's anemic. You can see right off her, she has a normocytic anemia with her MCV at 88. I think in the context of a lot of these chronic inflammatory diseases, this is something you're going to see, just an anemia of chronic disease. Additionally, her inflammatory markers, those are pretty nonspecific, but both elevated, which I think are a good sign that there's something autoimmune and systemic going on.
Yeah. And then on top of that, you know, her LFTs being normal and the rheumatoid factor, although, you know, it's nonspecific for RA, it's still interesting that it's positive, borderline positive there.
Yeah, it is borderline positive. Yeah, so I think looking at the CBC, something I noticed as well was that anemia, there's some leukopenia and thrombocytopenia. So overall, I think it looks a little bit like pancytopenia. And what other diagnoses or what next steps would you continue to pursue?
I think after this, I mean, we could do an x-ray, looking at their wrists or their hand or wrist,
mm-hmm.
see how bad maybe arthritis is or joint space narrowing, things like that. So that did right now.
So far, I guess like something inflammatory.
You guys were talking a little bit about rheumatoid arthritis. What other autoimmune diagnoses would you be considering as of right now?
You could look at lupus here, just kind of those general autoimmune symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does seem like there is a lot of inflammation, but I think you are headed in a great direction so far. You've already kind of narrowed it down to, okay, this is MSK related, but there's some autoimmune systemic involvement. For the next aliquot, we do continue some labs and we order a targeted autoimmune workup in your analysis. And what we see is that your ANA is strongly positive with a homogenous pattern. Your anti-double-stranded DNA is positive and your anti-CCP is negative. Your complements show a low C3 and C4, and your urinalysis shows mild proteinuria with no hematuria. And there's some additional history that you get. The patient recalls developing a photosensitive malar rash after sun exposure, hair thinning, and occasional painless oral ulcers. So you guys are smiling, so it looks like you're getting excited.
Yeah, a big slide for this here. I think that the anti-CCP is really big.
It's yeah.
Super specific for rheumatoid arthritis, and with the rheumatoid factor being positive, that's positive in lots of autoimmune conditions. So that doesn't necessarily make me think any differently. Low complements, really important for lupus, the mild proteinuria. She could be having something going on with the kidneys, maybe a nephrotic syndrome, something like that from the lupus as well. The malar rash, I mean, it's all kind of fitting that illness script, maybe.
What do you think about, like, you know, you guys have a lot of evidence to lead you towards one most likely diagnosis, but then when you start to think about someone who you think likely has lupus, what are some things you start to worry about?
I think you can worry about lots of things in lupus, but you want to make sure there's no clots anywhere. You want to check the kidney function as well, because you already see some proteinuria in this patient. The joints are obviously the main concern of the patient, but I think lupus affects everything and everywhere. Looking more systemically, like I was saying, is an important next step as well, to make sure there's nothing else going on that's maybe a more pertinent issue than some of the joint discomfort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Systemic, and think about other organs are involved.
Yeah. Your fourth aliquot is imaging and ancillary testing. So first we have a x-ray. And what do you guys see? Like, describe what you're seeing right now on the screen for the listener and walk us through what you're thinking.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm seeing, I mean, the hand is obviously the thumb. Maybe the PIP joint right there is hyperflexed.
Yeah.
With an extension on the DIP joint. Maybe some arthritis there too. I have to say that. Obviously, like the plaques right on the hands of the right picture.
Yeah, I think kind of looking at some of those joints, it looks like there's a little osteopenia right around where the the periarticular osteopenia. So I think maybe at this point she's getting some bone on bone type rubbing, which is causing an inflammatory response, which is why she's having so much discomfort in her wrists and her fingers.
Yeah. Is it possible to see any erosions or no erosions? You guys have mentioned you see plaques.
I mean, I think you can see.
Most dramatically, you can just see these joints don't look lined up.
Yeah, no, they don't.
And even if, like, and also the fingers look, they point the second finger, the thumb being the first, second being the pointer, looks thicker. Yeah, and the joint spaces don't look correct either.
Yeah. You do see some, like, periarticular soft tissue swelling around the MCP and the PIP joints. And, like, RA, SLE, like, all these different autoimmune diseases, something to consider is, like, how they might present in the joints as well.
I think this, like, this thing kind of, I don't know, like, I don't have the right medical words to describe.
I like red.
Red? Erythema, like, thickening. I don't want to call it, like, not sclerosing, but, like, I don't know what the derm, I don't have, like, the pretty derm words to describe this, but, like.
I think for you guys, the right thing is, we get caught up in words, and sometimes it complicates. So yes, you're right. I mean, because dermatology is sort of about very distinct naming of how the skin looks. Mm-hmm. Of course, I could ask you guys, can you think of certain rheumatologic diseases that would cause skin changes? But like you say, right now, make it simple for you, because making it simple for you is actually probably more likely to help you diagnostically than trying to confuse it with words.
Yep. Let's move on to the wrist ultrasound. We've got a labeled one for you guys. From where I'm looking, it looks like there might be a little bit of edema, a little bit of inflammation. So would that point you towards, like, if you're thinking about joint stiffness and pain, there can be mechanical underlying issues or maybe, like, true inflammatory. So does this point you towards one way or the other?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's some fusion there.
I'm not going to claim that I have a super strong understanding of what's with the ultrasound, but it just looks very generally inflamed, and I don't know if there's anything jumping out at me that really changes my mind in any particular way, but it kind of is fitting, like I said before, fitting that illness script of this particular patient and some of her symptoms.
Yeah, so
it's red.
Yeah, it's red. Lots of red on there, and it's nice to, as we're moving through these aliquots, it's nice that you're able to build on what previous information and labs have been given to you. So it can all kind of connect. We also did throw in a quick little echocardiogram, and we did label it. So on the echo, we see a little bit of pericardial effusion. Is this consistent with what you're thinking? Or what are some other differentials that you think could be underlying this as well? Because we all seem to be thinking the same differential right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of other automated things that, especially with all the things that we get.
I always find it really interesting, like, the pathophysiology of how autoimmune diseases can affect not just one organ, as you guys have talked about, but systemically. And so maybe complement activation and immune complexes causing organ damage in a more systemic manner beyond just the joints. And then it is that continuing to line up with your current illness script that you've mentioned so far?
Yeah, I think so. This is so systemic, and we already saw earlier with some of the proteinuria, her kidneys are being affected. I don't think it's any different that as she's having a pericardial effusion and kind of having this constellation of symptoms, because as you were talking about with that chronic complement activation, there's immune complex depositions.
Yeah. Would there be any additional clinical details that you might want just to really cement for you your final diagnosis as we move on to our final aliquot of information?
In terms of, like, a confirmatory.
Yeah. Like, is there anything you might order or ask about in the history that would really confirm for you, like, okay, this is what I think it is?
It's not necessarily synonymous with lupus, but I probably would ask about a history of clots as well. There's the high association with an antiphospholipid syndrome. So maybe ask about that. Just see if there's something else going on there as well.
Yeah,
her kidney. I'm just thinking of, like, other organs that could be involved in lupus, like you guys were getting at. And I wouldn't even have, like, known, or maybe this is a question for you, doctor. But is an echo a part of a normal way you work up someone with lupus, or only if they have, like, I'm just kind of curious, like, how do you know when you involve testing of other organ systems in someone you think is, like, has a diagnosis of that?
I think the answer to that question is hard. So it depends. It depends upon your clinical suspicion. One question you're asking me is,
should you just get a lot of tests on people just to get a lot of tests? And I think the answer to that in general would be no. There could be some circumstances where I might say, I am specifically interested in an echocardiogram because I'm thinking about lupus, right? So there are certain very specific conditions that lupus causes in the heart. And then there's some very general things that lupus causes in the heart. And I'll stop there because you're going to go on. And I do think this is something we could sort of swoon back to and talk about.
Sounds good. Yeah, so let's move on to our final aliquot of information. It's pretty short, but we have some final details. On further questioning, the patient describes joint pain that improves with activity, as well as intermittent pleuritic chest pain, and a direct Combs test is positive. So is this cementing your final diagnosis for you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then can I ask why?
I think the direct Combs test helps a lot. Also, on top of that, just the anti-double strand DNA earlier kind of left pointing towards it. And then also just the patient presentation, everything of the rash. It's all kind of pointing towards my thing.
Yeah. Okay, well, you guys did an amazing job. I tried to make this a little more tricky by throwing in the rheumatoid arthritis. And I thought we could talk about different types of arthritis and erosive arthritis versus non-erosive arthritis. But you guys got it right away. I think the anti-double-stranded DNA, then that was a big one. But yeah, the final diagnosis that you guys correctly got was systemic lupus erythematosus with prominent MSK manifestations, specifically non-erosive inflammatory arthritis. You guys did such a great job. You were working together as a great team. So next, we're going to move on to our teach-back section. And Sam and Dr. Abrams, we can talk a little bit about what is lupus, the common clinical pearls that you might see in a patient like this.
I'm excited to hear about this because I have no idea what lupus is.
So I guess things that we started off and put on the slide is that systemic being a main word on there, is a chronic relapsing, remitting, multi-system autoimmune disorder characterized by dysregulated innate and adaptive immunity. It involves the production of a broad array of autoantibodies and a formation of circulating immune complexes that deposit in tissues and activate complement, resulting in inflammatory injury across multiple organ systems. Disease is clinically heterogeneous and diagnosed by a combo of clinical and immunologic features rather than a single definitive test, which is kind of what we were getting at as we were like walking through all the testing. And I have even less experience than Dr. Abrams, but lupus presents in all these like weird ways, and it's that thing that people always throw in a differential when they like kind of wonder what it is. So other things about lupus, it's predominantly affects women, with approximately 85 to 90% of cases occurring in females, particularly during reproductive years. So when you guys said earlier on, young woman in 26 years old. Disease onset most commonly occurs between 15 and 45. Prevalence varies by population, with higher rates observed in African American, Hispanic, and Asian individuals compared with white populations. Estimates in the U.S. range from roughly 40 to 70 cases per 100,000. Family history increases risk, and she had the mom with RA, not with lupus, though, and a monozygotic twin concordance is substantially higher. The big point here being there's a genetic contribution. Environmental exposures, especially ultraviolet light, are known to precipitate disease flares. And that's like when they always say malar rash after going out in the sun.
We also have some evidence to support the case diagnosis. You guys already hit the nail on the head. First, there were those MSK features, the systemic inflammatory arthritis. I kept highlighting the ultrasound and the x-ray, and it's hard to see, but I was like, is it erosive? Is it not erosive? Is there a pannus formation? Because pannus formation is something you might typically see more with rheumatoid arthritis. In lupus, you might tell the patient you have this stiffness around the joints, but it's not causing erosive damage right now. I think some other MSK features I tried to highlight were the morning stiffness being greater than 30 minutes, and then there's a specific type of arthritis that's called Jakob's arthropathy, and that's deforming, but still not erosive. There are also those systemic clues that you guys picked up on, like the positive Combs test, and then the cytopenia as well. And then the immunologic workup was kind of like, I think, a big one for you guys, and you guys knew exactly what to order. The ANA strongly positive, anti-dsDNA highly specific, and then the low complement C3 and C4, and that is important to show that the immune complexes are being consumed, and that's why they're low. And then the anti-CCP was a really big differentiator between the RA as well. As we've talked about, just the systemic other organ involvement that we've been going back to time and time again. Sam, do you want to walk us through some next steps in management of care? Just providing some clinical pearls about what would we do with a patient like this? Would we order all the labs?
Yeah, and also, like, this is also, we can also call on our expert consultant. So correct me if I'm... This is, like, kind of my question was, like, so evaluating for renal involvement could be a next step. We could do urine protein to creatinine ratio, a repeat UA, consider a renal biopsy if proteinuria is significant or if urinary sediment becomes abnormal, or early identification of nephritis-guided therapy. I've never ordered a renal biopsy on someone, so I'm interested to see, like, what would actually be when he'd warrant that. I think that it sounds aggressive. I think any kind of biopsy would be, sound aggressive to me. Is a renal biopsy aggressive to do?
A biopsy, it's indicated in lupus when there's evidence of renal involvement. And you're looking for specific changes on the biopsy. One of the really bad consequences of lupus would be people getting lupus nephritis and going on to kidney failure. That I'd say is a devastating consequence of it. And so the reason to do the biopsy is to make the diagnosis in a way that you can then treat it, prevents something.
A next thing you could do would be initiating baseline therapy, which is a beginning hydroxychloroquine, which reduces flare frequency and improves long-term outcomes. And you could add short courses of low-dose steroids to control active inflammatory arthritis, systemic symptoms, or serositis as needed.
They have long-term consequences. You know, whatever kind of steroids you're going to take for a long time are bad for you, because, you know, if you're an athlete, you take long-term steroids, that's bad for you. If you take long-term corticosteroids, it's bad for you. You guys probably learned already some of the bad side effects. With any disease that you're using steroids, people are relatively early in the course thinking, what can I give so that I can stop these steroids on this person? Because, again, they have metabolic consequences. They've got consequences for your bones. They've got consequences for really almost for every organ system.
You could look at serologic markers, especially MONMEM, like these big things that Caroline called out, the anti-double-stranded DNA, the complement levels, just to follow activity of the disease. And you can repeat CBC and UA to evaluate for evolving hematologic or renal involvement. With like the degree of hematologic involvement, does that point to anything about severity of the disease? Like, how, if someone's anemic?
I think it just points to the that it's a multi-system disease, mm-hmm. and it's affecting your hematologic systems.
So I think that close fall, maybe this is getting at more, and I believe, like, once you are diagnosed with this kind of thing, not only is it systemic, but just having really close follow-up with your provider as they monitor the disease progression. It says other organ systems, like we talked about, and Caroline kind of got at this, with if someone had pleurisitis or pericardial effusions, that could be potentially, especially the pericardial effusions due to inflammation, could be really dangerous because of what happens when you get fluid around your heart.
It doesn't control it well.
The more fluid around your heart, precisely, then the worst case scenario could be like tamponade, could be cardiac tamponade. I don't know if you necessarily, I don't know, it would get that bad. Repeat echo if chest pain persists or effusions are symptomatic. And then just counseling, some protection, medication adherence, and then pregnancy considerations and medication toxicities. And then side effects of hydroxychloroquine. Which I think this medication has a lot of side effects as well.
Thank you so much for that teach back and for walking us through. I feel like lupus is always kind of like a mystery to me. Whenever RCs will ask us, okay, what's on the differential list? Someone's going to throw out lupus. It's fun to explore it in this way. And I always love seeing how sometimes diseases can mimic other diseases. I find that really interesting as well. We do have some reflections questions for you guys. You guys flew through that case. You knew what differentials you were thinking about. But one question I had was, what directions did you first go in terms of narrowing down your diagnoses, and why did you go in that direction? Walk us through step by step about what were you thinking from Alicot 1 onwards?
Yeah, I mean, starting off, I think when you showed us the first Alicot, kind of the vignette kind of fit a certain picture that I had in my mind. And then I was going from there. So, like, obviously, the vignette was kind of pointing towards RA. So already in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, this is VDRA.
there are multiple things that are kind of pointing towards. But then again, like once you started giving us more aliquots, then yeah, sort of labs, I'm you know, narrowing down that.
Yeah, I mean, from the first slide, I wanted to say Aura is so bad, but I figured that if it was, maybe you wouldn't give us the family history of Aura. That might have been a little too easy, but it was hard to ignore the constellation of symptoms. It certainly fit that vignette that you like to think of when you see Aura. But I think that's why what we hopefully did, and maybe we do a little bit quicker next time, is get that full CBC, get all those antibodies. We really honed in on the rheumatoid factor and the CCP. But I think that given her age and the history of autoimmune disease in her family, is be more general with those antibodies that you're looking for. Get the ANA, get the double-stranded DNA, kind of cover your bases a little bit more instead of picking and choosing each antibody to look for each time you get a blood test. You can stick her once and go from there.
Yeah, really important to consider the overall picture and then how there can be like mimics or very similar presentations, but different consequences or different diagnoses. And then was your aha light bulb moment, would you say that was those labs or that autoimmune panel?
Yeah, that was my aha moment, especially the rash.
Oh, the rash was okay.
There was a rash. There were kidney symptoms. There was a lot going on there.
There was quite a lot. We gave a lot of information.
That slide was certainly helpful.
I guess in the future, if you were presented with like other cases, what kind of advice, tips, or strategies would you use to not only for yourself build on like your clinical diagnosis development skills, but also for others? If you were to teach other people, like what would you say?
Yeah. I mean, number one advice is be broad. Even if you have an answer in your mind, you know, don't always commit to it. I think, at least for me on this one, I was painting a picture for RN. And then obviously that wasn't the answer. So kind of just having an open mind, make sure you have all the details before you finally make an answer, especially with a patient you don't want to make the longer.
Yeah, I think it's easy to get excited, especially with the vignette like that, where you want it to be an answer so badly because it seems to fit.
Yeah.
Lupus is obviously one of those things that's so general. So it can present a million different ways. Just for anything, it's important to kind of take a step back, see what the patient is suffering from as a whole, because she came in for joint pain and didn't realize that her kidneys weren't functioning super well, or she had a pericardial effusion. Like, these are things that she didn't even know was going on. So it's important to get that full workup before really narrowing in on what specific cause.
Yeah, I think we did a good job talking about a lot of different buckets. I think looking back, one, I was thinking about Andrew, and he always talks about must not miss diagnoses. And anytime weight loss came up, he would be like, okay, we got to check for cancer. And I was thinking like, oh no, we didn't shout that one out. But Andrew, if you're listening, we're thinking of you. So I think it's also important to not be locked in or like biased towards one diagnosis, because then a lot of times it can be that confirmation bias. And that's something that I know we talk about sometimes as well.
So every generation has what's referred to as sort of this great mimicker. And so if it was 100 years ago, it would be syphilis. Syphilis can look like everything. Okay. Lupus has had its day. When I was a resident, HIV, great mimicker. Maybe COVID really turns out to be the great mimicker of your generation. And what makes it interesting, what makes it hard, is I know what syphilis is. Like I said, I have no idea what lupus is because there are no diagnostic tests for lupus, right? There are tests that are suggested for lupus, but it's not like if you have a positive ANA or even if you have a positive double-stranded DNA that you definitely have lupus, because lupus and many of its cousins, which are so many of these autoimmune diseases, by minor counting diseases. So yeah, for lupus, how high do you have to count? Because it's a set of criteria, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, but lupus, remember when you guys, we learned this, it was like, you have to have like this and this and this and this. Right. I'm like remembering like a slide from class where like you have to have so many, like you have to satisfy so many of these things.
You have to count to a certain thing. If it's just the double-stranded DNA, sorry, if you have nothing else, you don't have lupus. Actually, it's the same for rheumatoid arthritis, and it's the same for so many of these diseases. And so these are their syndrome. It's not a disease, it's a syndrome, right? It's a syndromic condition. And so you've got to, as you guys already said, you've got to keep your mind open to it. And if you talk to rheumatologists, they'll say a certain number of people will evolve into lupus.
Like, kind of gets at what you actually do for treatment. I especially in terms of, I feel like you'll see this like later in your rotations, if like, people throw steroids at like everything. What do steroids really do? They're just suppressing the immune system. They're not actually, and like what Dr. Abrams was saying, what is lupus really?
There's always, I always think, where are the clues buried in the can? To me, and it goes back to the echocardiogram, because to me, the echocardiogram is a huge clue in it, only because it adds to what you guys said when you looked at the, putting the ultrasound and the echocardiogram together actually are a huge clue in my mind. And he, I think it was you, what did you say? What one of you guys said, what did that red stuff look mm-hmm. like in the ultrasound of the wrist?
It's an inflammation?
It's a fusion. One of you guys said, yeah, said effusion. And then right next to it was the ultrasound that said pericardial effusion. So the person had diffuse effusions. So, and then in the next piece,
yes.
Because what else did it, then what did it say when the other piece of history said they had pleuritis, which implies that they had some kind of effusion there. And there aren't that many diseases that cause what I would call diffuse effusions, right? Diffuse inflammatory effusions. And actually, lupus is one of those diseases that causes, I'll use the term polyceracitis. Mm-hmm. And so when people have these effusions in multiple places, lupus should come to your mind. There's another set of diseases that cause polyceracitis, which are the auto-inflammatory diseases. Mm. And I don't know, they probably need to talk about that, but there's diseases that maybe you've read about or heard about, like familial Mediterranean fever, things like that, which also cause those sort of things. You know, you almost got to pull the thing out and say, okay, which one of these four things that this person have? And you can easily, I think you could count up to like six or seven, the cytopenias, they had, yes. you know, rash, they had, the antibodies, they have the sericide, they have like all of them.
Yes.
And it's a diagnosis. The other thing is the difference between arthritis and arthralgias.
Mm.
Right? So arthritis is inflammation of the joint. Arthralgias are painful joints.
Yes.
And lupus probably more often causes arthralgias, although it can cause a true inflammatory arthritis, which it tends not to cause that much. You guys were fabulous. We're great.
Yeah. And like, for teaching, like Caroline designs or like, creates a really good case where like slowly leading you through and like kind of showing you like a perfect presentation. And like when you guys do board questions, stuff like that, it look like that. But in practice, I've never seen that ever, which is like challenging and not as satisfying. But that's where kind of the mystery piece comes in. Or like where I think your diagnostic testing goes, like, you think it's this and now you're trying to search for grabbing other things in the bucket and like, making it be...
Mm-hmm.
Making, like, signing if you can get enough evidence to, like, satisfy the diagnosis.
By the way, does anybody ever watch the show House? So, you know the sort of classic House thing? It's not lupus. It's never lupus on House.
Yeah, well, I think it's awesome to see that. I actually didn't realize that it was, like, four, that you had to count to four.
Yeah, but it's a counting disease. You count to four.
But I think that matched well with today's format, especially as we have these different aliquots, like different clues all throughout. And something I love about this series is how it's a puzzle, but, you know, geared towards our pre-clerkship students. So it's just amazing to see, like, even from my M1 year going into now we're in our M2 year, how far we've all come, how we're able to put together these labs. And we just started our heme block 2 weeks ago, and we're already analyzing labs, and we know what we're talking about a little more now. Thank you guys so much for being here for this episode of Alert and Oriented's Early Clinical Learner Series. Thank you so much, Sam and Dr. Abrams, for joining and providing so much advice and insight. Shout out to our guests, Chris and Grant. Thank you all for being here, and we hope to see you on the next episode.